Hello, Twins fans. This is John Swole with TwinsTrivia.com, and I'd like to welcome you to another interview with a former Twins player from the past. Today, we're going to be meeting with Bill Zepp. Bill pitched for the Minnesota Twins in 1969 and 1970 before being traded to the Detroit Tigers in the spring of 1971. Unfortunately, Bill only pitched for the Tigers in 16 games before he hurt his arm and, in essence, ended his career. So let's talk to Bill. Bill, you grew up in the Detroit area, and I have read some reports that you were a high school sports superstar. Can you tell us a little about your family and your high school sports career?
Well, sure. My father had been a very accomplished middle and long distance runner in track, and 5 and 10 mile races and steeplechase, and even ran in the Boston Marathon once in,
wow,
in his mid-20s, I guess he was. And he was from the East. When he came and settled here, and went to then Michigan Normal, which is now Eastern Michigan College for those of us around the Detroit area.
Okay.
And so settled here in the Detroit area. I went to what was Redford High School in the Detroit City League, and there were 20 or 24 high schools or so. And I had very modest basketball talents. I was on the team, but I was not a star or a starter or anything, and just played baseball besides that. And my first year, we were not there as freshmen, so in my sophomore year, I didn't even make a letter playing baseball because we had an all-city pitcher 2 years older in front of me, and he pitched all the games, and I played like one inning or so in the outfield at the last game of the season kind of thing. When he graduated, then as a junior and as a senior, I then inherited the number one pitching spot on the team and made all-city in the Detroit City League both of those 2 years.
Wow.
So it does, if that counts as a stellar career, yeah, I did okay in high school.
That sounds good. Were there any players that you played with or against that ended up going to the major leagues?
Yes, indeed. Excuse me, yes. In my summertime baseball, which was a collection of the players from all of Southeast Michigan, not just from my neighborhood, one of the ones I played with in amateur ball for a couple of Sandlot seasons and 3 years at Michigan was Ted Sizemore, who went to was Rookie of the Year for the Los Angeles Dodgers in 1969, I believe it was. Okay. Well, he and I had been teammates on either college or summertime baseball together for 4 seasons, maybe 5 it was. And we had a couple others that made it to the big leagues, were not really stars. Bobby Reed was a pitcher who pitched for the Tigers for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there was a Carl Schmerich who played in the big leagues for a little bit, and many, many others that went out into the minor leagues and had some modest success, and some made it to the big leagues for a little while, and some did not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Jeff Zahn was at Michigan. I was a student at Michigan for my college days, and Jeff Zahn was 1 year younger, and he went on to have a 10 or 12 or 14-year major league career. I know he pitched for the Dodgers, and I believe he was for the Twins for a while.
He did. I think he was, didn't he become a coach in Michigan?
Yes, he was head baseball coach at Michigan for a number of years ago.
Yeah, I've tried to contact him over the years and just can't get him to respond in any way, shape, or form. But it's kind of interesting. After high school, you attended the University of Michigan where you played baseball. Were you on a scholarship, and what kind of teams did Michigan have then?
Yes, I was on scholarship, and back then, in the mid-60s, the freshmen were not eligible, just like I had only 3 years of high school baseball to play. We did not play, freshmen were not eligible for the varsity sport in college during my days. So I had a sophomore, junior, senior year, and those 3 years, our team at Michigan finished, second twice and third once, perhaps, in those 3 years in the Big Ten. And so we had, some fairly decent teams, but were just, a little bit short of being the best in the Big Ten.
Sure. Sure. What you were drafted by the Milwaukee Braves in 1965, the Detroit Tigers in 1966, and the Red Sox in 1967, but you didn't sign with any of these teams.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
Well, it is virtually 100% due to the fact that I had such a poor career in college. I won only six games in 3 years, and frankly, I wasn't a very good pitcher. A couple of things. The peer group caught up to me, and you know, as happens when you graduate to higher and higher leagues, the talent level is always the all-star level,
sure.
and the guys caught up to me, and you know, perhaps I was paying some attention to my schoolwork, which I of course was. I had a couple of little health issues that probably helped me back a little bit. I did have one operation on my hand during my years in college, and you know, all in all, you added up, and I wasn't worthy of signing. And I suppose the first of all, 1965 was the first year the draft was instituted,
mm-hmm.
so that was the first year I was eligible, or anyone actually was eligible. So it was more of a courtesy, I think, on the part of those other teams that they drafted me, because I really didn't want warrant an opportunity.
I see.
At that time.
Then, in 1968, after you graduated, you signed with the Twins as a free agent. Can you tell us about how that came about?
Sure. I graduated with my bachelor's degree in 1967, and then I stayed in school 1 year longer and got my master's degree in 1968. And all of this time, you know, graduating from high school in 63 to finishing my, ending my college days in 68, and that period of time, my baseball fortunes had declined, as I earlier described, and then I had to remake. I was no longer a blazing fastball pitcher and everything like that. I had to learn and adapt and become a different kind of a pitcher.
Okay.
In terms of, do something else to get the batters out than just throw blazing fastballs, which had worked when I was in high school, but not later. So I remade myself. I learned a little bit about pitching, moving the ball around, changing speeds. My curveball got better, and I just became a little bit better. Well, it took all of my college days for this to kind of gel together, and I had wanted to do it, that is, try pro ball. And when the job market in the mid '60s was late '60s was kind of medium for graduates, I went to the old scouts that had watched me, and I asked this club, can we just forget the previous 5 years? Try and remember what it was like when I was in high school. I think I'm getting a little bit of that capability back. And so several of the guys that had known me and followed me all these years came to watch me. I was playing summertime, sandlot baseball in the Detroit area here. And they, one of them took me up on things as well. We need a pitcher out in Wisconsin Rapids for the Twins. His name was Frank Frenchy, who was a Bird Dog scout around the area here for the Twins, around the Detroit area for the Twins. And he said, sure, we'll sign you. By this time, it was late June 28th or 29th or so. The second half of the minor league season started July 1st or 2nd or 3rd. And so that's how I started. He said they had, I don't know if they had an injury or if someone washed out or got promoted to a different league or whatever. But anyway, there was a position available for a pitcher at Wisconsin Rapids in the A League, and they ball in the Midwest League there.
And
so that's how I started.
Okay, and I had you down there that, you were only 4-6 there, but you had a nice ERA of 3.00.
Mm-hmm.
And so what do you remember about, that first league of playing professional ball? What was that like for you?
Well, one of the things that I remember was after the first day I pitched two innings in relief, I had been there two or three days, perhaps. And they worked me into, let the new kid have an opportunity in the game. So I used to do innings. I think gave up one hit, no runs. And afterwards, one of the fellows asked me on the team, he says, oh, were you nervous first day in pro ball? And I wasn't in any way, shape, or form. You got keyed up, because you are, always are for any game. But I had pitched in my high school championship games. I had pitched two consecutive title games for my Sandlot summertime teams, and we won the national championship 3 years running. Two of those three, I pitched the championship game. I had pitched, albeit not well, but nonetheless, I had pitched in the Big Ten, and I had had a whole raft of experience in big, important games, and this was not... not nerve-wracking to me. I felt I belonged and all. And, so that is one thing I remember. I remember the team was kind of medium to poor, and my 4-6 record was pretty good for, I believe, a last-place team. I think only 6 teams in the league, and maybe we finished 5th or 6th. Something like that.
The following season, in 1969, you started in A-ball again, I believe, with Red Springs in the Carolina League,
right,
where you were 3-1, but you quickly were moved up to Double-A-ball with Charlotte in the Southern League, where you went 15-3 and had an ERA of 2.34 as a starter.
Yeah. It all came together, yeah. As I had explained to the scouts earlier, when I was trying to get signed to start pro ball, it all clicked. I was a little bit older than some of the fellows I was pitching against. I had some real legitimate age level experience, and I had some good success. Well, and then I got my ears boxed, and I was not doing well, and so I had to adapt. Well, I had the experience. I knew what it was like to be on top, 4 or 5 years before. I knew how poorly I had done and how the bottom of the heap felt in college. And then as I started to come back up, I sort of recaptured the glory, if you will. And I knew how to handle it, I guess. I understood that, if I fail again, that's no big deal. I've gone through it before, and I have a college education to fall back on, and what I do is not life or death. And if I can succeed at it, I'll give it a little while, and we'll see just how I can do. And but the pitching aspect of that was that I knew how to change speeds. I knew how to purposely throw the ball so it wouldn't be a strike, and I'd tease the batters and get them to swing at what they thought would be a strike, and it wouldn't be a strike. And, throw curveballs out of the strike zone, or fastballs, waste them inside, outside, and so on. And other times when you just had to give in to the batter and just toss it under him. If you had to, put it in the strike zone and say, here, hit it. If you beat me, you beat me.
Yeah.
And so there's a whole range of game situations that you learn only from experience, and I had a good deal of that.
Okay.
And so that stretch of those 18 and wins and 4 losses during that summer, I was really pitching well, but I was also pitching well, if you get the distinction.
Yeah, a difference, just throwing and pitching.
And part of it, and another thing too that helped, and when I got into Charlotte and I was at the All-Star break, I was 6 wins and 2 losses, I believe, and I made the All-Star team in the Southern League there, and so we went together, and there were players from all of these teams in the Southern League, and we were a team that played an exhibition game against the Atlanta Braves, I believe it was. So I got to then meet the All-Stars from the other teams around the league, and as the game was over and we went back to our usual cities, one of the pitchers from Columbus, White Sox, I believe, said to me, oh, are you pitching tomorrow night? And he was going to pitch against me, and I was going to, he had already pitched 2 or 3 games against his team and had beaten him once before. And he said, oh, it's time for me to suck up another L, because he was expecting that I was going to pitch well.
Mm-hmm.
He was expecting that he would probably have a real tough time winning that game. I was on a real hot streak. I was understanding that I was going to pitch a pretty good game. And my team was expecting that I was going to pitch a pretty good game.
sure.
Regular players, even the star players, you have hot streaks and cold streaks, and I just had a really, really good hot streak that summer.
It's a big part of the game then, not having ever played baseball myself to any degree, is the mental aspect.
Oh, absolutely, sure. No matter where you go in the level, when you get out of high school into your summertime leagues, when you get out of the summertime leagues into college, when you get out of the college into the minor leagues to from A to AA to AAA and up to the big leagues and so on, at every step where you go, there are the very best players from your previous level. And so, it's not like you can always dominate everybody. I mean, just a small handful of players in history have been able to dominate forever. And so what it is when you have your bad days, or when you have your less than good days is maybe the better way to phrase it. If you can, eke out if I could eke out five innings and give up four or five runs on a medium to poor day, just by being smart and not giving in, and maybe walk a couple extra guys sort of semi on purpose to get to the next batter who might be a little weaker, who maybe you can hit a ground ball for a double play for me. Those kinds of things, on average, over a whole season, will get you one or two extra wins. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you just get belligerent and refuse to give in and just say, okay, well, I'm going to throw fastballs because I'm a fastball pitcher, and don't make adjustments, those one or two extra wins a year you might not get because of not being smart about it. And, there's a good deal of mental aspect of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like a hitter, and I was not a hitter, so this is probably not real good advice, but when you watch a hitter, sometimes if you take, fastballs right down the middle and then swing at curveballs in the dirt, you want to work it so that you understand when the pitcher is likely to throw you fastball and when he's likely to throw a ball that is not a strike.
Sure.
Maybe on purpose, throw it, 6 inches outside or something. And if you can discipline yourself to understand the game situation, the at-bat situation, and then kind of go with the odds, you might get yourself one or two extra base hits every month that way.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you hit 310 instead of 290 or whatever it might be.
It doesn't take that many hits to,
it really doesn't,
to make a difference.
One of the comments I used to say would be, as a pitcher, and we used to have only four starters in the rotation instead of five, but let's say those four starters, if you pitched 40 games a year, you might have your really absolutely super stuff maybe 25% of the time. So maybe you ought to win those 10 games.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe by accident you might lose one of them or something, or one to nothing or something. But basically, you're going to really do well 10 games. And at the other end of the spectrum, you're really going to have nothing, and you probably ought to lose 10 games.
Okay.
But how you do in those middle 20 games, when you don't have your perfect stuff, you're just not quite right. And if you can outsmart the other team, you might win a few more of those than you lose. And sometimes after you got to look at it, the other guys are in the big leagues too, or they're in whatever league you are, and they are paid to beat you, and sometimes they do.
Yeah.
But sometimes you can beat them too, and how you approach the game is the fundamental aspect, I think, was that's what pitching is all about, is to do that sort of stuff and win when you don't quite have your best stuff.
Yeah. That makes sense. Later in that season, in August of 69, you got the call to join the Minnesota Twins. Can you share with us the circumstances of that call-up?
Yeah, we were the Charlotte, and we were at home in Charlotte playing a Saturday doubleheader, I believe. Yeah, it was about, it was late in the second game. I want to say it was maybe 10 o'clock at night. When somebody, and I forget who it was, I believe it was not somebody from the Charlotte Twins, I think it was somebody from Minnesota, but I really don't recall, called me off of the, I was not pitching that day, but called me out of the dugout and said, here, Billy, you've been called up to the big league. Here's an airplane ticket for tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock, and now Sunday morning, to go join the Twins. Here's $50, incidental money, and you're going to meet the team in Baltimore. And so it was because somebody else got hurt, not because I was doing so so well, which I was doing well, but Bob Miller was the right-handed relief pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
He had pulled the ribcage muscle or some such in Detroit a day or two before, and they then called me up to fill his roster spot. So now, interestingly, though, if the people in Minnesota or all around baseball, I'm sure, can remember the Billy Martin hit Dave Boswell.
Yes.
With the punch incident.
Yep.
That happened in Detroit on that week, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, whenever it happened in Detroit. And that weekend, that Saturday night, overnight to Sunday morning, was when I was called up to the big leagues. But it was not because of that incident.
Hmm.
But the first person, other than the not sales promotion man, the traveling secretary, who, when I got to Baltimore, I saw Tom Mee was that. The first person I saw was Billy Martin, and standing at the lobby in the hotel when I walked in. And I went to shake his hand, and he didn't give me a nice, firm, solid shake, a right-handed handshake. He just gave me his left hand and everything like that. And this was just totally out of character. I didn't understand what was going on. And I thought he'd say, "Hi, welcome to the club. You know, so-and-so got hurt, and we really need you, and wonderful, congratulations, you've had a good year, welcome to the big leagues, blah, 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 blah." None of that. It was just, "Hi." And so then, of course, I found out later at the ballpark what had transpired, but that was a memorable incident.
An interesting aspect to it, for sure.
It's totally unrelated, but it happened at the same time on the calendar.
Your major league debut took place on August the 12th in Yankee Stadium, I believe. And in the eighth inning, the Twins were losing like 10-3. And you came in and you retired Roy White and Bobby Mercer and ground outs. And you retired the great Yankee catcher Thurman Munson.
Yep.
Looking at a called third strike.
I remember it all very clearly. Yes.
What was it like to make your major league debut at Yankee Stadium, of all places?
Okay, absolutely. There are only, back in my era, 30 years ago, there are only two places, in my judgment, where anybody would ever want to be interested in playing baseball, and be in your own hometown
mm-hmm.
or in Yankee Stadium. And now this was Yankee Stadium before they refurbished it.
Yep.
And then now, you know, it has since been torn down, but before they refurbished it. So the monuments to Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig and whoever out in the outfield were inside the playing field. So that was the real pinnacle. I mean, to make your major league debut in Yankee Stadium, you know, the original Yankee Stadium, let's call it, was really interesting. So we were totally out of the game. It was 7-3, bases loaded, and then somebody hit a triple to make it 10-3. And so they had already had me warming up and then brought me in. So with one out in the, it was in the seventh inning, actually.
Oh, okay.
And so Gene Michael was the first batter. He was a switch hitter, so he batted left-handed. And with him, it's interesting, a man on third base. Of course, the pitcher has a choice of doing either a wind-up or pitching from the set or stretch.
Sure.
Well, I started doing it from the stretch, and Harmon Kilgore was playing third base. He walked over, picked up the rosin bag. And I, of course, knew all these guys from spring training, so that was not unknown to them.
Okay.
And Harmon said to me, he says, "Bill, you know, you can take a wind-up if you want." I said, "Oh, yeah, sure, Harmon, I knew that." And then proceeded to take the rest of my warm-up pitches from the wind-up. And, he had a ground ball to shortstop for the first out, the second pitch in. First pitch, I threw it, only missed by a couple inches, a little bit low, a little bit outside. I said, "Hey, I can do this." the next pitch I brought up in the strike zone, I had two hop ground ball and a shortstop, and I was inning. And then White, Mercer, and Munson were the three batters in the eighth inning, Yankees have the eighth inning. Two of them were ground balls to first base, and then the strikeout of Munson. And that ended the eighth inning, and then we didn't score in the ninth, and then, of course, New York did not have to bat in the ninth.
But it was a memorable experience.
Oh, indeed. One thing that I thought of later that I really liked, the first two batters were first three, Michael, but in the eighth inning, were two hop ground balls to first base to Rich Rich Reese was playing first base, and he caught both ground balls, real soft, not real soft, but, you know, medium ground balls. And he caught them within, you know, maybe 15, 18 feet of first base. And then, of course, I run off the mound, and I go stand, waiting there for the throw. And the first one, he just took three steps, got to first base, and got the out. Well, the second time, when Mercer did it, I did the same thing. Same old ground ball right there. And this time, instead of taking a little two or three steps to get the out itself, he threw the ball to me. To, in my judgment, when I thought about it later, and I wish I had told him that, I really appreciate that, because that, first of all, it gave credit for me having gotten off the mound like you're supposed to. I could practice a million times. Mm-hmm. But it gave me a chance to field the ball and catch a throw from another player in the game rather than just throw pitches.
Sure.
So that was another issue, a growing incident or time that helped me develop and get a little more comfortable in the game.
Sure. Sure, it's those little things that kind of make a difference.
Sure.
Although you were only with the Twins for a short time in 1969, what was it like to play for Billy Martin, who you would also play for later in your career with the Tigers?
Yeah, well, I only pitched, five innings? I think it was in four games. As I said, you know, I was just filling a roster spot because someone got hurt. Well, because the Twins were in first place basically all year, at least at that time when I got called up, I was not at all part of the real important mechanics or the need from the bullpen. So I was kind of the last guy, and I would pitch in situations where they just needed an inning or two, and it didn't really impact the outcome of the game. Although the second game I pitched, they pitched me about a week later, was I gave up a three-run homer in Boston. They put me in with a three-run lead, and so I guess they were trying to find out whether I would make that adaptation real quick, and didn't. So, but I only pitched, I think, four games, maybe five innings, and 69 was in the big leagues with Minnesota 50 or 60 some days was not a real test out of. Yeah. Other than it got all the nervousness out. So the next year, I had already faced big league hitters. I had already given up hits. I had already made strikeouts. And I had had I might have even had an at-bat, too. I mean, I had done it all, let's say. So the nervousness and the exposure to the game was already taken care of. So the next year in 70, it was I had all the nervousness past me.
Yeah, and in 1970 you were with the Twins all season. You finished with a 9-4 record, I believe, in 20 starts, and you pitched in 43 games, and you had an excellent 3.22 ERA, and you threw for 151 innings.
Yeah.
Tell us about that season.
Well, as with almost all young pitchers, back in my era, it's a little bit different now, but back then, you had to earn your way into the starting rotation. I didn't come up. I had been a starter my entire life. So when I got to make me a starter, I'm not going to take Jim Cott or Jim Perry out of the starting rotation because I had 18 wins or 22 wins in the minor leagues. That just doesn't happen. You earn your way into it. Well, so I was in the bullpen, but those first 23 games, or let's say it was about 20, I guess, games in the first half of the season, I pitched, you know, an inning here, a batter there, two batters here, and so on and so forth. And Bill Rigney was now the manager, but each successive time that I pitched, I did enough to the point where they would start to put me in more and more important situations.
Mm-hmm.
Early on in the season, I wouldn't get into a game unless we were behind by 6-0 in the fourth inning. Well, you know, a couple weeks later, I might be in the fifth inning when we were, 3-0. And then maybe in the sixth inning when we were tied. And then maybe the seventh or eighth inning, kind of stuff. So you kind of work your way into it. And I succeeded at doing that. That then led to one start in May or something. Dave Boswell, rather, had a sore tooth or a blister on his finger or something. So I had one start in the first half of the season. I did okay. It was against the White Sox. Gave up three runs in four or some innings. But back to the bullpen, because that was just an emergency start because he was not well that day. By the end of into the starting rotation and took one of the other guys out. It was Boswell that I replaced. And so I earned my way into the starting rotation, or he earned his way out of it. I don't know which, but anyway. So I started basically the second half of the season where I had been in the bullpen in the first half of the season. Toward the tail end, like in September, again, the Twins in first place as in the Western Division. As we approached the playoffs, they decided they were going to go with only three starting pitchers instead of four.
Wow.
And so they remade the starting rotation and took me out of the rotation and back into the bullpen. And I'm assuming that that was because I had done pretty well at the bullpen early in the season. And so that was, I wasn't really demoted. I sure didn't look at it as being demoted. It was like, okay, of the starting pitchers, we only need three. These other guys are veterans, have been a much longer time, and you did well in the bullpen, and therefore we'll send Bill to the bullpen. So, and in fact, they called me out, called me as the first relief pitcher in each of the first two playoff games that year, even though we lost them. But
In 1970, you know, there was also that famous August 25th game that kind of goes down in Twins history, and that was the day, I believe, you were pitching against the Red Sox at Met Stadium, and the police received a call that there was a bomb at Met Stadium.
Yes, I recall that. Yeah, there were a number of bomb scares, or at least one or two others, but in around a lot of major league sports. But there was one or two in Major League Baseball that summer, and. I recall that. I was sitting on the bullpen in the dugout, rather, between innings. It was the middle of the fourth or fifth inning or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, just sitting there, ready for my turn to come at bat, you know, three or four batters later. And there was Calvin Griffith standing at the edge of the dugout calling the manager over. Now, this is just unheard of, that the owner or anybody in the front office would be down in the stands, head poked around to the edge of the dugout, calling the manager out. And that was advising the manager what was happening, and just moments later, the PA announcer came on and said what was happening. So it was, you know, go grab a dry shirt and either go in the middle of the field or out in the parking lot. I chose to go out in the parking lot.
Well, really, I was going to ask you about that because, you know, supposedly, as I had read about it, that the stadium was evacuated, but about 2,000 people, including some of the players and the fans and the vendors, ended up in center field waiting
right.
for
yeah.
the all clear, and the rest were outside the stadium.
Yeah,
you know?
I went out to my car, yeah.
Really? That's interesting. I guess I don't understand why they would put all those people in the center of the field either. You know, that just...
Mm-hmm.
Kind of.
I don't know. Perhaps there wasn't as much experience with facing that sort of a situation or whatever. But that's what they did. They gave us a choice, and I didn't run, but I walked briskly in to pick up a dry shirt, and you know, probably within a minute, I suppose, I was out in the parking lot.
And they said the delay was about 44 minutes or so. But after all of that. Then you came in and pitched several more innings, scoreless innings.
Uh-huh.
I just can't picture that happening in today's environment with the way they protect the pitchers.
They do not too often send you back after you've had a chance to warm up. Well, they don't even do it with relief pitchers, who are used to, you know, up and down, three or four times in the game. Once they get in, they try not to have them. Particularly the closers, you know, pitched more than one inning. But I think they came back to Wisconsin Rapids, which I think was pivotal in my even getting invited to the Twins, to the Major League, that is spring training. One game late in the season, and again, this is only 4 wins, 6 losses. One game I had really, really strong, a good, solid game, and gave up one run or maybe even 0 runs into the eighth inning, I believe. And then we got a rain delay. Eight innings, maybe it was only 7, but I pitched a good long game and didn't give up anything but maybe 1 run at the most, and it might have been up. But then we got a rain delay. Well, pitchers batted back then, and so it was my turn to bat the next half inning. When we came back from the rain delay, that might have been 45 minutes or so. The manager there didn't want to waste an extra player, so he had me warm up, pitch one more inning, somebody from Minnesota had been in attendance watching that game. Report went back. I was invited to the midwinter or the fall instructional league down in Florida.
Okay.
Did roll very well there. Got invited to spring training the next year, and the spring training the next year was the last player cut, and blah, 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 blah. So I think maybe that one game might have been pretty pivotal, even though perhaps I lost it. I really don't remember it, but that was not unlike the getting sent back after the bomb scare.
Yeah. Kind of, it's funny how when you look back on certain times or certain events, how they could have changed possibly the way everything transpired. And
oh, sure. Sure. Well, even asking, hey, would you come look at me?
In 1970, for the second year in a row, the Twins won the division but were swept by the Orioles in the playoffs. And you pitched in relief, like you mentioned, in the first two games. And if I remember correctly, because I listened to those games, you gave up a home run to Boog Powell.
I sure did. Boy, he smoked it to center field. A couple of feet left center, but it was virtually straight away center field. At probably 430 feet or so, maybe 40. Really, really hit it well. And it was just a change-up curveball on the outside corner, and he must have been outfought me on that one. And I had pitched against them in spring training. There had been two or three games during the season. Lou Powell probably saw me for, pick a number, six or eight at-bats. He knew how I liked to pitch. And he beat me that time.
Yeah, that's, sometimes you win, sometimes the other guy wins.
You don't, yeah.
They both paid to do their thing.
Right.
The Twins, they just couldn't get past the Orioles. And, how good was that 70 team, would you say?
Oh, with the Twins?
Yeah.
Oh, very good. Very good, yeah. I mean, we had a nice mix of veterans. I mean, you had, as I said, Jim Perry and Jim Cotton, Karnofsky and Stan Williams, and then of course, Harmon and Tony Oliva and Rod Carew and guys that, from, and Rich Reese I mentioned, and John Roseboro was a backup catcher to Mitterwald, and Cesar Thor, and Cardenas, and a lot of experience, and a nice handful of rookies, too, well, first or second year players, that had a real nice mix of talent. And, but the guys in the Eastern Division were maybe a little bit better.
Yeah.
And they beat us on three games in a row, two years running. So.
Yeah, that was kind of tough, just losing back-to-back like that. And I had done one of these interviews with Dave Boswell, too, and he's an interesting character to talk to, certainly.
Yeah, one of the most funny lines I ever heard anybody, he was just talking amongst us players one time, and he says, Calvin came to me and asked me, he says, if I should ever have, had been there enough years that the courtesy would be, well, if I had to trade you, who would you prefer I make a trade to? Not that I can guarantee it, but, if you had your choice. And he said, anybody in the big leagues. So I thought it was a beautiful little comment.
Yeah, it would be.
So, and that was Dave. He was just like that.
He was pretty funny when I talked to him, and right now I'm in the process of reading a book that Rod Carew had wrote, and I'm not sure that Rod and Dave Boswell necessarily saw eye to eye too much, but he was talking about, that I hadn't heard before, that Dave Boswell had a habit of carrying handguns with him when he traveled on the road.
Well, if he did, I didn't know anything about it.
That it was just in a book, that I was reading today. As a matter of fact, that's what I was saying. Sometime in 1970, I think it was, you had asked to be traded to the Detroit Tigers so that you could pitch closer to home. You took a lot of heat about that trade request back then, but today free agency players frequently look at playing close to home as a matter of personal preference.
Sure.
Can you tell us about that time in your life?
Well, I don't want to talk about it too much, but you're right. Back then, the reserve clause was still intact.
Yep.
And the player was bound forever to the team that signed him and owned him, and you had no choice to get to somewhere else. It could be, it could be a health issue. It could be if you were the a center fielder in the Yankees behind Mickey Mantle, what are your chances of playing much? And
sure.
And so on. So there are reasons not just financial, but health and family and just you want to play situations. And I had a situation like that that it wasn't working for me in Minnesota. And I needed to be traded, and I was able to do it. It was not because I had free agency on my side. It was just kind of goodwill, if you will, and I could withhold my services. I could either play or not play, and that was
sure.
The only two choices I had. So
sure.
I was able to get a trade, and then I hurt myself. So it was, you know, I probably would have hurt myself with Minnesota too. So I only had another half a season more.
Yeah, and that was
who knows? Yeah, who knows?
Yeah. That was going to be my next question. In March of 71, the Twins accommodated your request and traded you to the Tigers, but you only pitched in 16 games for the Tigers before you got hurt, and you pitched your final game on June 20th of that year. What injury did you sustain at a... And that was at the age of 24 when
it was Tommy John, ripped the tendon away from the elbow kind of injury. And... I joke about it. I'm sure there are a couple of thousand pitchers that could lay claim to the fact that had they had that surgery, it could have been named the Bill Zepp surgery. Because, I talked to three or four different physicians, Dr. Curlin and Dr. Job for the Los Angeles Dodgers out there, who actually developed the surgery with Tommy John. I talked to the team physicians of the Detroit Tigers, and I talked to the team physicians from the University of Michigan that I had, orthopedic surgeons and such. From Michigan there. And all of the comments at the time were, we've never done the kind of surgery that would be needed on a major league level pitcher. We would go in there and pull that tendon back up, and we would screw it or nail it or tie it or somehow bind it together to your, reattach it, and then put your arm in a cast for 6 months, and then slowly and surely stretch it out and hope it didn't rip again. And that was kind of the best that they could promise. Well, let's hope it doesn't rip again.
Mm-hmm.
And so I chose not to do it again. As I said earlier, I had the fallback with the education and everything. I'd worked in the off season already getting prepared for when I wasn't going to be a ball player any longer. It just came a decade sooner than it would have been nice, but nonetheless... like I said, there are a couple of thousand pitchers or more maybe that had this, had that injury and no way to get it fixed. And after that, they didn't come with a Tommy John surgery for another two or three more years.
Yeah.
And so there were probably county high school, college, minor league, major league, probably another several hundred afterwards that would have loved to have the opportunity to get that surgery, but it wasn't there. That's the way it was.
Yeah, but luckily, you had the education, like you said, and there's so many other players that probably didn't have that going for them.
Well, yeah, there are a whole bunch of different avenues to get to wherever you're going to end up in your life, and mine just took a little detour through baseball. I had a really nice career, shorter maybe than would have been nice, but it was awfully good for a little while.
Yeah, you were, like you said, it was a relatively short career. You pitched in three different seasons. Do you qualify for any major league pension or anything?
No, not at all. It took, back in that era, 4 years of major league baseball service, service total. And I had, parts of three seasons. You add it all up, and it's just a shade less than two total years.
Mm-hmm.
So you need four total years in the big leagues to qualify and invest for your pension. Somewhere around 1979, 80, 81, in that time frame, they changed the rule to the point where anybody who played at all in the big leagues vested for their pension with, maybe it took 30 days, but let's say day one, basically, you got to the big leagues, you qualified for your pension. Now, that wouldn't buy you very much when you're 55 or 60 years old, but nonetheless, you would have the opportunity for your health insurance and life insurance and whatever pension money it might be. So, no, I did not vest because I played prior to that period of time.
What pitches did you throw, Bill, and what did you consider your out pitch?
I considered my out pitch a curveball. It was really probably more of a glorified slider, but I also had a real good sinking fastball. And so I got a whole bunch of those ground balls and top balls that were hit, you know, in the infield. Got a lot of double plays that way. And not too many strikeouts and not too many fly balls, but again, I thought my out pitch, my best pitch was a curveball. Other people looking at it would sometimes say, well, your fastball, or my sinking fastball, let's call it, I'd turn it over a little bit, was my better pitch. So if they were expecting that and I was expecting to throw a curveball, then that was perfect.
Yep. What did you go into, or what did you do after your baseball career was over?
Actually, I went into it while I was playing baseball. The first year, remember I said I had my master's degree?
Yep.
The first year after I was done, I did not play winter ball. I came back to Detroit and worked in a summertime, or in a job that I had previously worked in the summertime. Now in the winter, worked for just a couple, 3 months in a small machine shop on a drill press, making $250 an hour with a college education.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who is going to hire somebody for a training program or long, or for what you would hope would be good, legitimate, long-term employment, knowing for what you're going to leave in 2 or 3 months?
Yep.
So that was, but as I said, invited to the Major League Spring Training. Marvin Miller was the head of the players union, came around and gave a speech at spring training outlining all the good things the players union was doing for the players: meal money, salary, travel conditions, and a host of other things, you know, medical and dental and all that stuff.
Sure.
One of the things he mentioned was an off-season employment program that will help you guys get ready for the time when you're no longer a baseball player. And if you go for 1 or 2 years or for 10 or 15 years and you get a chance, this will give you an opportunity to, first of all, earn a little money, which we needed back then,
mm-hmm.
but secondly, get some business experience and exposure for yourself to tell you what, you know, you might think you'd like to do in the future. I wrote Marvin Miller a letter that summer while I was now down in Charlotte having that real good year, explained to him, I listened to every word you said in spring training, and I would be a perfect candidate for your program. I outlined who I was and my education and what I had done last year, and wow, I would like to know more about this program. Well, he wrote back and said, well, thank you, I appreciate your interest, and the program right now is still not off the ground just yet, but I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll write some letters on your behalf from me to some people that I've got to know over the, he was, you know, had been in business at unions around many, many years, so he wrote letters of introduction about me to the vice presidents of personnel of a half a dozen companies, like Chrysler,
wow,
like U.S. Steel, like Beatrice Foods, like, you know, Alcoa, and other companies,
mm-hmm.
you know, big major companies that he had dealt with as a union boss in years, and they all sent back, sure, man, we're interested in people for our training program. We'd love to have them call when the season's over, and we'd love to talk to them. Well, that's how I got my foot in the door at Chrysler, and I started that just in November of 69, just a couple of months after I had been playing big leagues for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back each year after that. I worked, went to baseball, came back and worked in the wintertime, went to baseball. And 31 years later, with Chrysler, when I was done playing ball, I knocked on the door and said, hey guys, you know, I've only got 3 years' experience now, 3 wintertimes' experience. I'm ready to go full-time. You know, let's talk. And so I got in full-time with Chrysler and worked for 31 years and was able to qualify for a retirement program several years back.
Pretty interesting.
Well, that's what I did.
That's pretty interesting. I had spent like 38 years working for, Wells Fargo and Northwestern National Bank. They're
sure,
you know, one and the same. And,
uh-huh.
and you know, back then, I guess you could get a job and expect to stay there for a while as long as you kept doing what you were supposed to.
Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, times have changed a little bit since then.
They're a little different now, but back when I was playing, you know, I mean, once I got the opportunity, of course, you have to earn your way back each winter time, and so they were able to take me back. And then, you know, once I was done with baseball, I was done with baseball, and they knew it. And I was a, and the beautiful thing about it is I was able to get into which was my major field in college, with a master's, MBA, Master's of Business Administration. That's what I was able to do for my entire career, was work in marketing.
Well, you must have had an interesting career with what happened at Chrysler over the years.
Oh, yeah, sure. It went through ups and downs. There were a couple of 2 or 3 month or 5 month long layoffs here and there during the gas crisis in the mid-70s. There were two of them. And then in 1980, when Chrysler first flirted with bankruptcy and got the loan guarantees from the Congress, and Iacocca came over, and then we made this dramatic rebound. And then when Daimler-Benz bought us out, and then later Cerberus, but I had retired in the meantime. So when Daimler-Benz bought Chrysler, became Daimler-Chrysler, they reevaluated the staff requirements and all. By this time, I'm now a 30-year-long employee. They said that came with a special early retirement opportunity for people that were already eligible to retire on their own if they chose.
Mm-hmm.
And then they sweetened the pot just a little bit, and so there I was. And I took it.
Well, that sounds pretty good. Do you follow baseball today, Bill?
I do. I don't read all the box scores because there's so very many of them, whether it's 600 or 700, 800 players or something like that. But I do follow the Tigers, and I do root for the Twins a little bit when they're in our same division as Detroit.
Yeah.
So I have some mixed emotions there. But I'm a reasonably solid observer of the game. I would not call myself a fan, though. It's interesting that you asked that, and people. The last couple of 3 years, I finally figured out why I enjoy the game maybe a little bit less than I might if I were just a regular old fan.
Why is that?
Because maybe I'm a little more critical of it, having played the game, and I watch it. And even though it was 30-some years ago, I look at it and say, or 40 years, excuse me, where's my arithmetic? 40 years ago. That, in this kind of a situation, if I were the pitcher, I would do such and so. If I were playing right field, I would play, a shade him this way or that way. If the ground ball is hit to the first baseman, if I were the first baseman and I hit this ground ball, this is what I would do with the play. So maybe I watch it from an analytical standpoint, more so than just from a fan standpoint.
Okay.
I don't say that makes me more critical of it, but it makes me observe it from a different point of view. And so consequently, maybe I don't get quite as emotionally involved, carried away with the results of the whole team is the best. All that. I appreciate good plays. I appreciate good baseball. And when I see anybody make what I think is a nice, smart play or a really good, solid pitching effort, if it's against us, if it's in, Little League, and I happen to be watching a game like this, if that was a smart play, I like that.
When you say you followed the Tigers, what are your thoughts on the recent Galarraga and Near Perfect Game incident?
Oh, my goodness. that is really interesting. I guess, he did throw a perfect game. In fact, he got one more out. He threw a 28-out perfect game. I would be, I wish at the time that the umpires had gotten together in council with it and Joyce asked the other three umpires, hey, in case they, did you see anything different than I saw? If the other three umpires might have, and they do this on foul balls and home runs and other things, they counsel sometimes together to make sure they get it right. In this particular case, maybe if they had, the other three umpires may well have said, I didn't see it. I didn't, or I was 90 feet away. It was your call. And then that would have been okay. And yeah, too bad, but that's the way it goes. I guess I don't want to see them overturn it. But if they had instant replay, then yes, that would have been overturned. That would have been a perfect game. So you think back, there must have been some pitches in the fifth or sixth inning or something like that where ball three maybe missed the plate and they called a strike, and the game would have been wrecked earlier in the game by a marginal call. So and I can't say that because I did not watch the game. It was my golf night. But nonetheless, there might have been other times when the game would have been lost. It's such a precious thing to have a perfect game, though.
Yeah, I didn't see it.
How many, there must have been, 20 or 30,000 baseball games that have been played over the years?
Yeah.
Figure it out. I don't know. But
And it's pretty amazing. And then, you know, I've had several this year.
Two, yeah. That would have been the third in just about 3 weeks or something.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. But I have to agree with you. I don't see any way that they could change it and give, you know, go back and give them a perfect game after.
The only way you could say it is that it was the last out of the game, and you could come along and say, okay, at this point, this should have been the call, and at that point then played the rest of the game, you know, like a protest type thing.
Yeah.
But, and there would have been no rest of the game to play. So, but if that, just suppose the same exact thing had happened one out earlier, with only one out, not two outs.
Yeah.
And you ask to do this and overturn it, anything like that. Doesn't work that he got the next batter out because the whole attitude of everybody would be different.
Yeah.
And so I guess it's just left, that's left the way it was.
Yeah, it's...
It's sad to say it is for the pitcher. It was really too bad, but...
Yeah, and... You know, and the expression from Galarraga that they showed on TV after it happened, you know, once he caught the ball, he seemed really excited, like it was, he knew it was a perfect game, and then the call went against him, and he just kind of smiled. He just...
Sure. I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, you know, over the years, you throw, you know, the pitches that are called a ball and a strike or something like that, if you think, those, you know, maybe you got a break, and you called a pitch a strike that was really 2 inches outside, you know, you're a little smug and a little happy about it. Or if you throw one that you think is a perfect strike and he calls it a ball, hey, what can you do? You know, the guy just disagreed with you.
Just
in that case, what can you do?
What about instant replay? Do you think they should bring that in?
Oh, tough call, tough call. Well, they do have it now for deciding home runs.
Yep.
And, or whether a fan interfered or something like that. I don't know. It's really tough. It irritates me in football games, for example, that they often take so long. And it interrupts the flow and the attitude and the way the game is progressing and all. I don't know. I'm kind of a purist in that regard. But let it be the way it is.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I'm not big on the instant replay. These things have happened for years and years and years, and I guess to me that's just the human part of the game,
right,
and that's the way that...
Yeah. You know, in basketball, they take seconds to look at it, and they say, oh, okay, was it a three-point shot or not? Boom, they make a decision.
Yeah.
Was it before or after the time clock expired? Boom, they can make an immediate decision, and it takes seconds. And so that doesn't really interrupt the flow of the game too much. But, you know, there's a danger of bogging down the game.
But they say, you know, other people take the perspective of saying, hey, when managers come out to argue, you know, that stops the game right there. And, you know, an instant replay might be quicker.
That may buy some, well, that's true, but it may buy something later. And it also, you know, sends a message to your team that, you know, hey, guys, we're not out of this game yet. If we were, I wouldn't bother to argue, you know, kind of stuff. So.
What do you do today, Bill, and what do you enjoy doing in your spare time? You mentioned golf here a little bit.
I don't play a whole lot, but I'm in a golf league, and I play a little bit here and there. My wife and I go to concerts of a symphony orchestra, and we just putz around. Probably the best way to say it is I'm truly retired. I don't really do very much of anything. When I describe my day, it really sounds kind of boring, but it sure isn't to me.
And I'm retired also, and my days sound the same, but they're not boring either. It seems like you're busier now than you ever were.
Right, yeah. I mean, you know, I read the paper a little once early than I did when I was working, and I, you know, watch a little bit more of the news on TV and you know, take care of my lawn and stuff like that. I keep busy, but I'm happy with it.
That's great. Before we wrap up, Bill, did you have any final thoughts for your fans back here in Minnesota?
No, other than to say I was delighted for the, and very thankful for the opportunity that the Twins gave me to play. I was happy that I was able to make it to the big league. I contributed not too much in 69, but I was right in the middle of the, the pitching staff. And what I did in 1970 mattered. It, not that they live and die whether I won 9 games or not, but the point was I was there and I helped out, and it mattered what I did, which was pretty satisfying for an athlete to have your effort count. So I found the fans very, very do your work, and hopefully you do it well. But afterwards, I seem to get more perks now as a non-player. A request for sign my baseball card. People sure. send their postcards. I'm collecting autographs from people that played when you did, and yeah. and so on. As it's you know, it's neat that people still call and ask for you know attention.
Well, thank you, Bill.